Good evening, and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Linda Calhoun, Vice Chair of the Club's International Relations Forum, and your chair for today. We'd like to thank the NorCal Peace Association, our partner for tonight's program. We also welcome our listening audience, and we invite everyone to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now it's my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker, Dr. Landry Signet. Dr. Landry Signet is an award-winning Banting Fellow at the Center on Democracy, Development, and the Rule of Law, CDDRL, at Stanford University, where he's working on a book analyzing the evolution of sub-Saharan African economies, political regimes, and governance in the 21st century. Prior to joining the CDDRL, Dr. Signet was a visiting scholar at the Stanford Center for African Studies and a lecturer for the course Emerging African Markets, Strategies, Investments, and Government Affairs at Stanford Continuing Studies. He is also a founding president of Accentus International, Inc., a firm specializing in accelerating the business expansion of corporations in international markets. He has worked or interned at the United Nations Department of Political Affairs, the Senate of France, the National Assembly of Cameroon, and the French distributor, the Casino Group. He has studied political science, international relations, communication, business, and has received numerous grants, honors, and distinctions, including the award for the best international PhD dissertation. And now, please join me in welcoming Dr. Landry Signet.
Good evening. Thank you very much, Linda, for inviting me and for your amazing presentation. Thank you again. Thank you also for attending this lecture that shows the growing interest for Africa. English is my third language, so please forgive it. This presentation on emerging African market will be organized around 3 points. First, I will present Africa as a transition from a hopeless continent to a hopeful continent. Second, we'll explain the transformation, the political and economic transformations in the continent. Third, the challenges of doing business in Africa, some business opportunity, and we'll finish by presenting some strategies to transform opportunities into results. To begin with, 12 years ago, The Economist published an article entitled Hopeless Africa. Reason to despair about the future of the continent. At this beginning of the 21st century, several arguments, including the despotism, diseases, famine, misery, were used by The Economist to show that there is no hope for Africa. The Economist has almost apologized for the first article, explaining why Africa is growing and is likely to continue to grow, notably with reasons such as commodity booms. Several countries have discovered oil or diamond, which has accelerated economic growth. We also have more democratic government. About 17 countries are currently either electoral or liberal democracies. We also have new non-Western actors such as China, India, Brazil, and other countries which are investing intensively in Africa, fostering the manufacturing and service development. So, the economists is not, they are not the only one to think that Africa is emerging. An article in the Harvard Business Review considers that Africa is home to many of the world's biggest opportunities. The Financial Times considers that Africa is rising rapidly up to the agenda for global investment managers and is also one of the least affected continents by the recent financial and economic crisis. Finally, Mahajan considered that Africa is richer than most of people think. So, why do business with Africa? What are the transformations? It is important to bear in mind that 7 out of the 10 fastest growing markets for 2011 to 2015 are estimated to be in Africa. That's an estimation from the International Monetary Fund, including Ethiopia, Mozambique, Tanzania, Congo, Ghana, Zambia, and Nigeria. And for 2011-2010, 6 out of the 10 fastest growing markets were in Africa: Angola, Nigeria, Ethiopia, Chad, Mozambique, and Rwanda. If we consider also Africa as a whole, Africa is in the top 12 world economy. Usually, people will say that Africa just represents, which is not false, 2% of the international trade. However, in terms of GDP, gross domestic product, Africa is ranked within the 12 best economies, before Canada. Also, when we consider the gross national income per capita, 17 African countries perform better than India. About 11 perform better than China, and about 2 to 3 perform better than Russia or Brazil. By having a look at the gross domestic product growth rate for the last decade, we can see that both the real GDP growth and the GDP per capita growth are between an average of 3 to 5%, with some peak of up to almost 7% for the 48 sub-Saharan African countries. Moreover, Radele have published a book entitled Emerging Africa, where he is analyzing 17 countries, showing that these countries are the fastest growing one and may be considered as emerging. Some of them are Botswana, Burkina Faso, South Africa, Ghana, and so on. Radele is actually advisor of Hillary Clinton and was formerly advisor also of the president of Liberia. He has 5 reasons or 5 transformational changes that he identified to classify countries such as emerging. The first, the rise of more democratic and accountable governments, the implementation of more sensible economic policies, liberal policies, the end of the crisis of the 20 years, 2 decades of economic crisis in Africa, the new technologies, and the emergence of a new generation of political leaders, activists, and business leaders. So we can see that it is not just a fashion to say that Africa, there is a dynamism in Africa. Real things are happening on the ground. However, there are still several challenges of doing business with Africa. The first challenge is political and regulatory uncertainties include conflicts. We have the case in Senegal, but all with political mobilization, but in a more damaging way in Ivory Coast, Côte d'Ivoire, but also in Libya, Tunisia, Egypt. We also have the question related to governance, to security, bureaucracy, corruption, or several aid-dependent countries. The second are economic challenges. We have several small market countries, so country of about 1 million people. An underdeveloped private sector, a dominance of the informal sector or markets, the reliability of partners, the volatility of the commodity price, the cost of finance, and the low productivity. In terms of social challenges, we have the culture, the etiquette, skills, poverty, diseases, education, and so on. And finally, in terms of risks affecting business profitability, we have political risk, sectoral and infrastructure risk, purchasing power, currency risk, acquisition, merger, and joint venture risks, to name some. Despite these challenges, Africa is also home of several opportunities. We will present 5 main sectorial opportunities, beginning by the consumer market, then the capital market, agriculture and food industry, information and technology, energy, water, clean and appropriate technologies. To begin with the consumer market, several international corporations are already operating in Africa. Google, Nestle, Oracle, Coca-Cola, etc. It's also important to bear in mind that both international and national corporations are very successful. It's the case of Coca-Cola, with about 5 billion, which sold about 5 billion products in 2006 for $5 billion. Unilever, which sold about $2.6 billion. It is in euros, so 2 billion euros. We also have Mo Ibrahim, which created a technology company in Sudan, and 7 years later sold it for about $3.4 billion. We have Ali Dangote, which is also estimated to worth about $13.8 billion. So we have clearly a trend in Africa of successful entrepreneurs that illustrate the trends. So, to successfully penetrate the consumer market, several segments are to be considered. First, the elite segment. It's about 5 to 15% of the population, meaning about 50 to 150 million people. The middle class, the African middle class, is almost comparable to the international standard. They behave as people behave in the US, in Canada, or in France. We also have the middle class segment with a discretionary income. They are about 35 to 50%, so that's 350 million to 500 million people. the African middle class is comparable to the one of China or India. And finally, we have the basic needs segment, more than half of African population, who are people that live, most of them live with less than $2 a day. So, even if we just consider the half or the 500 million Africans which live with about or less than $5 or $2 a day, it is important to consider that they are also consumers of Coca-Cola products. So corporations that are able to innovate will also be able to tap on those customers. An illustration of a case study in Kenya. So an analysis by Catherine Gayu. So we can see that for the three segments, the basic segment, the class segment, and the middle class segment, and the elite segment, we will see that different customer will have different behaviors. In terms of transport, the poorest will walk, bicycle, or take minibus. The middle class will take minibus, and the elite will use their own car. They will sometimes have a driver. For banking, for example, the poorest will use the postal bank, the middle class will use cooperative, and the elite will use banks such as Barclays or any other international banks. And for cosmetics, the poorest will use local products, and the elite segment will use products such as Nivea and several other products that we can find here in the U.S. So some opportunities in the consumer market include for the basic needs projects such as food, clean water, pharmaceutical products, or medical services. They are projects that people really need. By providing affordable products, you will be able to also have customer. In terms of individual needs, you will have electricity, education, schools, universities, insurance, clothes, mobile phone, etc. In terms of collective needs, we'll have waste management equipments, water pumps, power plants, public transportations. And in terms of entrepreneurial projects, people may also organize the market and distribution, create new brands, develop real estate projects, deliver prefab houses, create new brand, etc. So we can see that different segments have different opportunities. So it depends on the product. The second sector that we'll analyze tonight is the capital markets. The capital markets is growing in Africa. If you want to invest without managing data, it will be recommended to invest in Africa-focused mutual funds, meaning collective and diversified investment that may include stocks, securities, or bonds. You can also invest in exchange trades funds, which are funds that track an index but can be traded like a stock. You can also directly buy stocks for corporations directly investing in Africa or other American depository receipts and so on. This is an illustration of the biggest stock exchanges in Africa. Johannesburg, of course, in South Africa, with more than 1 trillion. That is a data from April 2011. We also have Namibia, Nigeria, Botswana, Egypt, Casablanca, or Nairobi. So these are some examples of funds, the Nile Pan-Africa Fund. You should clearly understand that I'm not recommending to buy. Please contact your financial advisor if you want to buy. But I'm just illustrating. So it's important to make this disclaimer. We also have the Exchange Trade Fund, the S&P Emerging Middle East and African Fund, or the Market Vector Africa Index. Finally, several private equity or venture capitalist firms, either here in the United States, in Europe, in Canada, or in the Arab world, also exist, and there are ways to invest. Turning on the third sectorial opportunity, agriculture and food industries. 60% of the world's unused arable lands are located in Africa. That is huge. When we know that Africa is importing products, food products, is a net importer, not an exporter. This is even worse when you know that there is a lot of undernourished people in Africa. So a local market exists. For people interested in investing in agriculture, there are several countries of greater interest. The coastal ones are Côte d'Ivoire, Ghana, Cameroon, Sudan, Kenya, Tanzania, or Madagascar. Those are the countries which has important portion of arable lands, but which are also coastal, facilitating the transportation. In terms of other opportunities in agriculture, you also have tractors, irrigation systems, and crops. The United Nations Industrial Development Organization have estimated to about 50,000 per year the number of tractors to be replaced in Africa if the ones actually there are still functioning well, meaning the potential is even greater. Just 5% of Arab land are irrigated in Africa. So it's also important to notice that China, India, South Korea, Saudi Arabia are massively investing in agriculture in Africa, buying sometimes 100,000, if not million, of hectares or acres. In countries such as Ethiopia, Kenya, Madagascar, Senegal, Mozambique, Cameroon, you should consider seriously investing in the agricultural sector if you are interested in doing business with Africa. We also have opportunities in the food processing materials and industries. Those include juice extractor, brewing material, packaging machine, and so on. It is important to bear in mind here that just the wheat market for Nigeria is about $1 billion for 2010. It's the biggest importer. The rice is for about $1.5 billion. Cameroon import wheat, corn, and rice for about 400 million. Mozambique represents also a huge potential, as the government is encouraging investment in food processing to transform fruits and to also take advantage of the African Growth Opportunities Act. The fourth sector, information and technologies. Africa is the fastest growing mobile market. More than 60% of annual growth from 2005 to 2010, that is the evolution of the mobile phone market in Africa. So, about half of the African population, including the poorest, have a cell phone, actually. You can see indigenous people, farmers, or even president or former president. Opportunities in mobile phone. We have SMS application and marketing solutions, with example of USAID in Kenya. We have mobile payment and health solutions. We also have training and consulting services. Most importantly, cooperation that will be able to innovate and to create a very low cost or several low cost products, such as cell phones, smartphones, wireless tablet, will be able to also sell to several million. In terms of the evolution of Facebook user, that is for 6 months dating February 2011, so 6 months prior to that, Africa was the fastest growing Facebook continent with about 50% of new subscribers. So we can be proud of that, being at the Silicon Valley. It's also important to see that countries such as Egypt, Morocco, Tunisia, or Algeria, where political mobilizations and sometimes political changes following the Arab Spring were present, are also the countries which has the fastest growing Facebook penetration. So opportunities in telecommunications and internet include basic infrastructures for internet access, such as modems, routers, wireless keys, digital switching technologies, satellite services, or infrastructures for universities, public institutions, schools, and so on. We also have internet providers. Several licenses are available in several African countries. Social medias, Google and YouTube, are doing pretty well in that sense. And Google was recruiting less than one year ago some representative to develop both in to manage the African continent public affairs, but also to develop particularly the Francophone market. And we also have innovative internet services. It is important to highlight here that telecommunication equipments in Nigeria has represented over $500 million in 2010 for about 10 billion revenues for the telecommunication sectors. In Senegal, it's modest, but still about 22 million. And an interesting case study here Iseltel Anmo Ibrahim, which is a Sudanese born with a PhD in mobile communication. He was working at British Telecom before founding in 1989 first Mobile System International, and then in 1998 Celtel International. He was pretty difficult because he started from scratch. Banks were not open to provide any loan. Luckily, venture capitalist and private equity firm believed in his transformational vision and funded the project. About seven years after, he sold the corporation for $3.4 billion. And he's now helping, offering several prizes to African leaders which will retire, especially in democratic countries, which will not try to run more than once. He offered them grants for life. So, turning on the last sectoral opportunities, energy and water. For energy, several projects may be developed for electric power, hydropower, solar, biofuel, or geothermal developments. In terms of water, we can have water purification, water storage, irrigation systems, desalination, or consulting. But if something is to be highlighted here, it is that individual and local solutions will be the best way to approach the market than global ones. In terms of individual solution, we can have solar product. Here is a solar lamp. For students in rural area, remote areas. You have similar products for small businesses that imply an increase in productivity. Instead of stopping that may provide two or three hours more to small micro entrepreneurs to be able to sell their product during the night. Individual solution also include water purifiers or solution to transport water as what is illustrated here. It helps the drum, it helps children to transport five times more water than they usually do with less effort. So, having presented the overview of opportunities, we can now shortly discuss about how to transform these opportunities into results. It is very important to adapt the knowledge to the African context and to develop a strong competitive advantage with the SWOT analysis. What we should bear in mind here is that causes of failure in Africa should be considered. For example, the lack of knowledge in strategic management, the inability or the lack of will to develop a clear vision, executable business strategies, or operational plans. We also have the religious and cultural barrier, different way of negotiating, different ways of managing, the fixation on immediate profit. If you are going to do business with Africa, you should be patient. You have the inefficiency in leadership and sometimes management structures, which is the consequence of a paternalistic leadership management that reduces the motivation, increase the absenteeism of employees. We have some unethical business implying fake or deceptive products advertisement. And most importantly, entrepreneurs conducting business in Africa should always bear in mind that few agreements are really enforceable in Africa. Few agreements are really enforceable in Africa. You should then develop an excellent relationship with your local partners. So, having done the SWOT analysis, developed a sustainable competitive advantage, it is then important to consider the market entry strategies and each market segment has a different strategy. For example, people considering distributing in the basic segment needs, representing about 500 million, should consider that as a mass market. The product must be basic, such as food, in small quantity, such as they will be affordable. The price should be very low. The distribution channel should be the small stores, direct selling, grouping selling, micro entrepreneurships. The promotion or communication support should be radio, posters, referrals. The sales must be done via individual, non-governmental organizations, sometimes government or international organization that will buy the product and distribute them. And finally, the profit will be small per unit, but important in volume. So we have also different other strategy that should be adopted for the middle class or the elite segment, but that may be discussed in another presentation. And also the strategic roadmap, very important to articulate the target customer with their value proposition and the sustainable competitive advantage and strategic resources. To conclude, three recommendations. The first, when doing business with Africa, you should be creative. Opportunities are available in every sector and segment, even if the middle class appear to be the most promising one. You should also be rigorous. Analyze your customer needs, your competitors, and develop an executable business strategy with a sustainable competitive advantage. And finally, you should be smart. African markets are complex and uncertain. So it is recommended to hire either international or local partners to help you penetrate the market. Thank you very much for your attention.
Our thanks to Dr. Landre Signe, our presenter on emerging African markets, for his comments here today. I'm Linda Calhoun, Vice Chair of the Club's International Relations Forum, and I'll be moderating today's audience question period. Dr. Signe, we have a large number of questions, so let's begin. We had a couple questions that deal with sort of the competition to get into African markets. And this question is, how can American companies compete for large-scale projects in Africa when China sends large state-funded delegations with government support? The questioner also cites the Wall Street Journal that Chinese firms accounted for 40% of corporate contracts signed in Africa last year, compared with just 2% for the U.S.
So it is important to bear in mind that since 2000, investment in China have been multiplied by 10 in Africa. And China is more competitive. One of the reasons as to why China is more competitive is that China do not have conditions when working with African governments, especially in terms of human rights, in terms of political governance. So that partly explained the prominence of China in Africa. However, America is still there, and different ambassadors are actively working to defend the interests of corporations. America have a lot of resources, so the most important thing is to explore what are the resources available and to develop more projects. So I think there is a lot of room for American corporations to develop corporations in Africa.
Thank you. We also had a couple questions that are dealing with the environmental challenges that usually accompanies development. And do you have any thoughts on how these are being dealt with? And also, you know, another questioner was looking at the rapid population growth and its environmental consequences. And is that considered more of a challenge or an opportunity? So if you could address those two.
Of course, there are several environmental challenges in Africa. So the difference between those environmental challenges in Africa and here, I don't have the exact proportion, but still, Africa is one of the continents where we have the lowest rate of pollution. And the fact that African governments are signing international accords, international agreements, increase the prospect for respect to the environment norms. The other difference is that contrary to developed countries, several African countries do not have the same leverage than more developed countries. In terms of rapid population growth, I think it is an opportunity for Africa as far as the government is also developing public services and is able to control diseases.
You mentioned the sale of Celtel to Kuwait, and the question here is, you know, what is Africa doing to protect, by protect meaning keep in African hands, some of its strategic companies, assuming that telecom is considered strategic? And also another questioner wanted to know, what is China sort of giving back in terms of, you know, its investment there? And we know that it's getting a lot of energy and food products, but what's in it for local economies?
African governments have a very low leverage to protect their most successful companies. It is simple. As individual entrepreneur, if locally, you are able to make $50 million a year, and a corporation come to offer you $1 billion, you will be more likely to sell. So, of course, by selling we can have some issues in terms of sustainable economic development. Still, the leverage is very low, and I don't think that things will change. In terms of China giving back, I think that China, as most other countries, mainly defend their interest. So I do not believe that in international relations, relations between states are more on a strategic basis. So I think China is trying to help perhaps with infrastructure projects, but I don't think that is dissociated to your interest.
And then a question about the language of commerce. For Americans, is it okay just to know English? Do you need to know English and French? What is the predominant language of commerce?
English is the main language, but entrepreneurs that are able to speak other languages or to hire local translators will be likely to be more efficient. So it's recommended either to speak a local language such as, depending of the country, French, Arabic, Portuguese. Either it's important to speak the local language or at the end, English will be, with English, most of the successful local partners will also be bilingual, at least.
And I'd just like to remind our listening audience that this is a program with the Commonwealth Club of California, and you're listening to Emerging African Markets with Dr. Landry Signier. Now, for folks who want to do their due diligence and research investment opportunities, what are some data sources you can direct them to?
The first thing to do as an American citizen is to be in touch with the local embassy. Several data are provided by the American government. So the first thing is to contact the embassy. We also have several other services, international organization with primary data, especially organization from the United Nations, such as the United Nations Development Program, the International Organization, the United Nations Industrial Development Programs, but it is very important to know the customer needs in Africa. It is also very important to go on the ground. Even before hiring a local partner, if you really want to invest $1 million in Africa, the first step is to go in the country that you are interested in, to have your personal opinion, to be in touch with your potential customers, to understand how things are working. Then you can decide to move forward or not. This step is also important as it will allow you to build partnerships locally. It is better to deal with partner that you have at least met once, interacted, even though it is not required for success.
And what selection criteria, and you can summarize this, I know you touched a bit on it in your presentation, would you use in choosing which countries or markets to enter?
The first criteria is to choose a country that you know. That's always invest in a country that you know. Or to choose in the country that has the greatest prospect for the opportunity that you are considering, the sector that you are considering. There is not just one answer to that question. He depends on the opportunity. Do you want to invest in agriculture, in the health sector, in mobile phone? Nigeria, if you are looking to invest in the mobile phone, is the country that has the greatest number of mobile phone subscriber. So it depends on the opportunities. It depends on your interest. It depends in the sector. If you want to invest in the stock exchange, you may be more likely to invest in South Africa, which is the most regulated, the better regulated stock exchange in Africa.
You answered a question that someone asked about which African stock exchange offers the best returns. And with so many private investment dollars rushing into Africa, what sectors are sort of at risk for bubbles?
Well, I think the potential is huge. So I'm not envisaging a bubble at this stage. The most important is to identify different opportunities and to develop. I think there's room to, China has showed that there's room for everyone that is really interested in investing and to considering the customer as what they are.
And one questioner wanted to know, what's your relationship in terms of promoting business investment for Africa?
The relationship in terms of promoting? Mm-hmm. It is by doing what I'm doing now. Inviting people to promote, inviting people to invest, but also advising is required. So, and I have done it during the past. I'm working personally also in African projects now.
And you touched in your presentation on educational attainment in the countries in Africa. Can you describe the level of educational attainment and how that education correlates with real needs in Africa in terms of agriculture, food products, technology?
Well, in terms of how education correlates with real needs in terms of agriculture or technologies, a lot is still to be done in Africa. So several universities are changing their program to adjust to the local demands. In university, specific academic programs are created for what the country really needs. But that also depends of the country, depends of the regions, and there's not just one answer. I met with a vice chancellor of a South African university, and I have asked actually the same question, how he was promoting the training in his university of students to meet the demand in South Africa. And it is by creating new programs and developing high-standard trainings.
And this is a broader sort of political question. As you look at the success that various countries have had on the continent, can you speak to the impact that the end of the Cold War and the many proxy struggles that were staged during the Cold War that, you know, helped to destabilize various countries on the continent. Can you speak to what we see now that the Cold War is over and how that's contributed to this era of growth?
I think the end of the Cold War is probably one of the best things that have arrived to Africa. Because first, in terms of political governance, you have seen several countries coming from very authoritarian way of governing to democratic one. In 1990, perhaps Africa has about three democracies, where in 2010, it's about 20. So we can see that the end of the Cold War has offered more room to political pressure in order to develop political rights, civil liberties, and to help African citizens to express themselves. That is from a political perspective. From an economical perspective, from an economic perspective, what was also very interesting with the end of the Cold War is the systematization of liberal policies. If initially they had a bad impact in terms of education, in terms of health, I think the change in economic growth in Africa during the 21st century is partly explained by the political and economic policies that have been adopted, reducing the clientelism, corruption, and so on.
Thank you. And then also looking at opportunities for healthcare and extending life expectancy, what are your thoughts on the whole healthcare sector?
I think there's a huge opportunity also in the healthcare sector. First, healthcare sector is intrinsically important because people should live longer and better in Africa. Second, government which are investing in the healthcare sector and with partnership with international cooperation are improving the prospects for citizens. So I would think that the healthcare is improving in Africa, but there is still a lot to be done, as several diseases such as the AIDS, such as the paroxysm, are still devastating the several countries.
And I have a couple questions that people have asked in terms of spiritual wars, so to speak, going on with various countries, within various countries on the continent. And another question spoke to the rise or growing Christian fundamentalism and any negative or positive traits related to that. So if you could sort of speak to what's going on spiritually.
Well, I do not think necessarily that what is happening in some country must be generalized to the whole continent. So perhaps we have South recently some conflict, especially in Nigeria. So in other countries, both Muslims and Christians are cohabitating in a very peaceful environment. And I think the problem are the fundamentalisms from each part or from each region. So I do not think that is necessarily something organized by the Pacific citizens.
Great. And one other question that we had in terms of environmental issues relates to solar and other green technologies. Can you speak to some of the developments that are going on there?
I think solar energy represents an opportunity to Africa, as I have shown before. Students that were not able to study during the night can easily use different products that are developed. So it represents now the challenge is to make the products affordable for Africans that really need it.
And unfortunately, we've reached the point in our program where we have time for only one last question. And Mo Ibrahim, I've read that he replaced Oprah as the wealthiest black person on the planet. Is that true?
Well, according to Forbes, it is supposed to be true.
Great. Well, thank you so much. Our thanks to Dr. Landry Signet, Banting Fellow at Stanford University, for his comments here today. We thank our audiences here, as well as those listening to the recording. And now, this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 109th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.
Thank you.